And a very good evening to you from tonight's edition of Health Matters. Tonight we're focusing on dementia with my guest, Karen Barakowicz, Executive Director of Dementia SA. Karen, good evening. Gosh, it's been absolutely years since you've been here. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Karen. Thank you very, very much. Thanks for having Dementia SA.
If you have any questions, you can call in now on 0892 10 2010 and you can also SMS us on 40938. Dementia isn't a specific disease. Instead, dementia describes a group of symptoms affecting memory, thinking, and social abilities severely enough to interfere with daily functioning. Though dementia generally involves memory loss has different causes, so memory loss alone doesn't mean that you have dementia. Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of a progressive dementia in older adults, but there are a number of causes of dementia, and that's what I'd like to chat with you about first, Karen, the causes of dementia.
So, Karen, you know, the cause of dementia, we're not actually entirely sure exactly what causes dementia, but we do know that there's a number of factors which, that give rise to a higher risk of developing a dementia. So, for instance, vascular conditions, bad diet, problems with finding words, describing things, etc., are possible causes where somebody shows that there is some kind of cognitive loss or cognitive decline in a person. So in terms of the causes directly, you know, it could also be problems with hormones, depression, undiagnosed diabetes, changes in medications, etc., that really, really, need to be sorted out by a doctor or so on a regular basis in order to make sure that that somebody functions well with a dementia going forward.
The dementia, is that the umbrella term?
Yes.
So, and then Alzheimer's is one of the conditions that falls underneath the dementia umbrella.
Correct. So there's over 100 different types of dementia. So we have frontotemporal lobe dementia, Lewy body dementia, vascular dementia, which in the old days used to be known as Fukakanfaniara. So, you know, then there's Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is the one that gets most attention because it is the disease that essentially is the most commonly found. And then we get HIV, AIDS, neurocognitive dementia, but as I say, over 100 different types of dementia.
Is this something that could be genetic or hereditary if one or more of your parents had it?
Well, there's a number of factors that determine that as well. So if the person diagnosed with a dementia develops a disease very early on, like in their late 50s, early 60s, the risk is much greater of developing it with another family member. But essentially, only 5 to 10% of cases are true genetic cases.
Okay, so because I think people get very confused with the dementia and the Alzheimer's. Is it the same thing? It's Alzheimer falls under the umbrella, the dementia umbrella. So it's
right.
One of the conditions.
Exactly. So I think that probably one of the easiest ways to understand it is if you're talking about a bowl of fruit, okay. So fruit is the global name, is the name of all the different types. So you get bananas, apples, oranges, nectarines, etc. Those are all different types of fruit. So obviously, then Alzheimer's disease would be one of those types of dementias.
You mentioned just a short while ago, you said if you develop it early, 50 or 60, if Alzheimer's, is that considered early? Is this something that you would normally see in a person much older than that?
Right. So we do get something which is known as early onset dementia. So if anybody had seen the movie Still Alice, she develops the early onset or young onset dementia, that's quite a debilitating form of dementia. My mother, for example, was 62 years old when she was diagnosed.
So that's quite young.
Very young, yeah. So, and she passed away at age 83. She lived for 21 years with the disease, which is really sometimes what happens, is because the person is physically well, but obviously mentally the progressive stages of the disease cause the person to have this debilitating cognitive loss, a loss of memory, loss of thinking, and that cognitive loss is challenging.
If you have any questions, you can call us on 0892 10 2010 or SMS us on 40938.
The search for One Day Leader 2018 is now open. SABC Education and SABC One are searching for a young, vibrant person between the ages of 18 and 25 who will be crowned South Africa's next One Day Leader. To enter One Day Leader, go to onedayleader.co.za. Entries close on the 27th of December 2017 at 4 p.m. SABC Education, enriching minds, enriching lives.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Getting back talking about dementia and Alzheimer's, if you have any questions, 0892 102010 or SMS on 40938. Karen, the impact on the family, not just the person diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's, the impact on the family must be quite traumatic.
It's absolutely enormous. And the thing with a diagnosis of dementia is it can dislocate a family enormously because, you know, family members each have a different way almost of grieving. So, you know, usually when it comes to the diagnosis of dementia, that initial shock is something which, you know, where the whole family needs to be counseled and needs to understand what this disease is, what is going to happen in the following months, years, etc., going forward, and what the person's care at the end of the day is really going to look like. Not that you're going to be planning right at the onset of the disease for that, but everybody needs to be on the same page in terms of what that care is going to look like. And, you know, more often than not, you know, everybody wants to help, but they actually don't know how to help. And that sometimes is a cause for great distress amongst the family, because caregivers need to, whether it is a spouse or a daughter or a son or, you know, grandchild, etc., that's looking after a person with dementia, need to vocalize and need to voice exactly what it is that they need in terms of help and of support. And usually that is very, very difficult for them to vocalize.
It must be very difficult to care for a person with dementia at home, although everybody would like to. And then you get this whole thing of the guilt, because you sometimes feel maybe they would need further care that you aren't able to give. And that is a very difficult time for the family as well, trying to decide how to help their family member.
Right. And, you know, that's why it's very important for the family to establish some kind of understanding of what the disease is, what the progression of the disease is, how the family can best support the main or the primary caregiver. And then, you know, to move forward in terms of, you know, how best to maintain that particular situation, and really what is it going to be that is going to be in the best interest of the person with dementia. You know, many times, dementia becomes more a nursing condition than it is actually just assisting the person around the house, you know, helping them with bathing and helping them, you know, dressing, etc., etc. It's not only just about that, because as the disease progresses, you know, there's incontinence that comes into play. There's sometimes swallowing difficulties that come into play. So there's a whole lot of other, you know, medical conditions that maybe need more kinds of direct nursing interventions than just being able to keep them at home to care for them at home. But obviously, you know, we would want to have the person with dementia stay in their own environment amongst their family or with their family for as long as possible. But then that does mean that family members need to step up to the plate to assist and to provide some kind of support, whether it's grocery shopping, whether it's making meals, whether it's allowing the caregiver to have some kind of respite, to go away for a holiday, you know, and those kinds of things. But it's also just to say what it is that the caregiver or the primary caregiver needs.
I was reading a very interesting book a number of years ago written by a woman living in the UK who's mother-in-law developed dementia, and they actually had a double story house where they converted the lower story for the mother-in-law and her husband to move in. But they cared for her for a good number of years, but it got to the point where there was quite a dramatic personality change, and that was the part when it became, it wasn't viable really, because they had small children and it was becoming quite a problem, and it was a huge decision for them to have to make to move her into a care home.
It is the most devastating. I've experienced that feeling firsthand, and it is the most devastating decision to make. It's heart-rending. And it's not a decision that many families like to make. But sometimes, the decision has to be made. But there again, it must be a decision that is discussed amongst family members and as much support possibly given to the primary caregiver.
You wanted to tell me some things about Alzheimer's.
Well, I think that the thing that we need to understand about Alzheimer's disease is that it is, you know, the hallmark of Alzheimer's disease is plaques and tangles. And that is what it is that is forms in the brain. So it is plaques, beta amyloid protein, and plaques and tangles which develop. Whereas, for instance, a vascular dementia is really, as I mentioned earlier, is like for calcium from the aura. So it's hardening of the arteries, and you know, instead of being in your heart as on a macro scale, these are tiny, tiny little blockages that happen in the vascular part of the brain, which then cause the brain to shut down and certain parts of it to atrophy and to die. So, you know, certain functions and functioning is lost in certain parts of the brain.
If you'd like to ask us any questions, 0892 10 20 10 or SMS on 40938. One of the things we have, not just in South Africa, but internationally, are drug problems. And there's an SMS that's come in here. There's this new drug, I don't know whether you've heard about it, called Flucker. It was in Durban. It started, I think, in KZN. It came in from America. It's now reached pretty much everywhere in the country. But basically, the listener's asking whether this new drug, Flucker, can cause dementia, and how can one cure this when Flucker is being used. I mean, just, you don't know that it's a very new. I've only just been hearing about it in the last month or so. Right. But drugs in general, if you are misusing drugs and you're doing all what you shouldn't be doing with them, can that actually be one of the triggers for a dementia?
Well, you know, I don't know whether it's specifically a dementia as anything, but definitely anything that is mind or mood altering will definitely have some kind of long-term effect, whether it is a dementia or whether it is possibly even a depression, hallucinations, paranoia, any other kind of symptom of mental illness, absolutely, you know. So anything that is, can change and alter, as I say, mind and mood, would definitely have some kind of negative effect, absolutely.
And early signs of these conditions, because it's not something that you wake up one morning and there you have this.
Well, that's the very interesting thing. So, you know, we always say that it's a progressive disease, a disease that progresses, you know, over time. Where usually a caregiver would be able to say, you know, I've noticed a few changes in, you know, my loved one, and these are the things that I'm noticing. And some of those things, I mean, we talk about the 10 warning signs, and those 10 warning signs are available on our website as well. And, you know, those are things, for example, like disorientation of time and place, misplacing things, feeling, you know, despondent, changes in mood, changes in behavior, like becoming either very argumentative or very aggressive, problems with language, understanding things, rational thought, possibly having some kind of irrational responses to certain episodes or discussions or what it is that possibly causes a person greater anxiety. And, you know, so those kinds of things are things which a caregiver would notice over a period of time and then say, you know, these are the things that I see are becoming worse and worse. And then, you know, that is the intervention. You know, when did it start? Was there possibly something that triggered it? and how to start, because that is critical information for a GP, and then for ultimately for a diagnosis of a dementia.
I don't want people to start panicking here, but some of those things that you mentioned are the beginning of that list of symptoms. We all, every now and again, will experience one or the other. So it's not that you've suddenly misplaced something or you've forgotten a word for something that now suddenly you're in the early stages of Alzheimer's.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely. And I think that that's important to clarify that. So what we usually do, and what is done in terms of a diagnosis of dementia, is it's usually a process of elimination. So firstly, all of these things start manifesting and we see them on a regular basis. But there's a number of other diseases and medical conditions which can cause, a pseudo type of dementia. So, for example, depression. Absolutely.
But while you're on that point, I've just had an SMS here that says a 28-year-old has been diagnosed with depression. Could this be part of dementia?
No, not necessarily. And as I say, I'm not a medical doctor, but certainly any kind of memory problems or problems which cause, you know, the person to have extreme anxiety about their memory or about their functioning or daily functioning, absolutely go and have a check on.
But just because you've been diagnosed with depression does not mean it's the start of dementia.
Definitely not. No, definitely not. And there's a whole process. So, there's a lot of things that need to be eliminated before a diagnosis of dementia is made. And those things, for example, the doctor will look at things like, you know, what are those things that are causing the person some kind of a distress? Is there anxiety? Is there depression? Is it possibly a clash of medications? Is there a thyroid problem? Is there a folic acid level that is not quite right? Is it possibly even blood pressure?
So it could be. Don't panic to start with. Just go and get yourself checked out.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that if you leave it and not have it checked out, it causes more anxiety, which exacerbates all of those feelings of, anxiety of, is this possibly a dementia, where it really is, it might also be like the onset of type 2 diabetes, and hormone problems. I mean, many women who are perimenopausal or in the throes of menopause could also experience, loss of memory, or, not as astute and not as sharp a memory as what they had before menopause. And I speak from experience of that. Absolutely. And we all know that women who are pregnant too, there's certain, those hormonal levels are huge.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Right, we're back this evening with Karen Barakovich. She's the Executive Director of Dementia SA, and we're talking about dementia, Alzheimer's, and a range of conditions that fall under the dementia umbrella. And if you'd like to call us, you can do so on 0892 10 2010. And I always ask, please, I know you all have lots of questions, please don't leave it to the last minute. And then I can't speak to all of you, and I hate closing off the show and having to say I'm so sorry to a whole lot of people who weren't able to reach us. So if you do have any questions, please do call in as soon as you can, or SMS us on 40938. Right, Karen, we've got a couple of SMSs in here. It says, I'm 74 and I'm taking a lot of tablets, and just recently I started to forget what I wanted to do. Can the tablets cause this?
There's absolutely no doubt that, any kind of medication needs to be evaluated by a doctor either every 6 months, if they real chronic conditions, a number of chronic conditions, but definitely at least once a year. Conditions change, cholesterol levels change, blood pressure, levels change. Depending on what the condition is, it's absolutely essential that medications are reviewed. It is possible, as I say, I'm not a medical doctor, but I would suggest that the person, if it's causing anxiety, definitely the person needs to have a checked out.
And then somebody wants to know what the difference is between schizophrenia and dementia.
Wow. Okay. So schizophrenia is a mental disorder, mental health disorder, and dementia is the loss of thinking function, which cause progressive loss of the ability to maintain and to conduct one's life on a regular basis. So there's in terms of dementia, there's progressive loss of thinking function, whereas with schizophrenia, mostly it is maintained through active medication, etc., etc. But you know, that is
two completely different things.
Completely different. You know,
when it comes to treatment, is there anything?
Well, you know, there are medications available that slow down the progression of dementia. My mother was actually on the clinical trial for the drug Aricept, which is quite well known and widely used. The thing is, though, that the efficacy of many of these drugs is really only about 18 months to 2 years, you know, at whatever stage of some of them are better in the earlier to mid stages, and some of them are used sort of later on to assist with some of the symptoms that one would find, particularly in behavior, etc. There is no cure.
No. Is this one of those things that the treatment would possibly assist just that little bit better the earlier you got there?
There's no doubt. And that's why we as Dementia SA definitely promote an earlier diagnosis, because I think that once that diagnosis has been made, as scary and as difficult as it is, it certainly is something that can help a lot of families come to terms with the reality of how their lives, you know, have changed and how to deal with a person that has the dementia and lives with the dementia in a more positive way. They would be able to understand some of the behaviors, modify some of the communication that needs to be changed, and, you know, understand how the person is responding in a different way to their environment.
We have Johan on the line in Benoni. Johan, good evening. Hello, Johan. Johan, are you with us?
You hear me?
Oh, there you are. Hello, Johan. Thought we lost you there for a moment.
I turned my head 5 degrees and the phone goes all wonky.
Sorry. How can we help you, Johan?
No. I've sort of got a double whammy facing me.
So
my father died. Well, he had Huntington's.
Oh, okay.
Now, you know, I've spoken to doctors in the past, and I say, oh, no, my father had Huntington's, and they sort of like look at me and they say, are you sure? It's very rare. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, after my dad died, they sent samples of his brain to Nancy Wexler in London, who's one of the big experts on Huntington's, and it was confirmed he had Huntington's, but it was... there was no history in our family of it, although there might have been. I mean, you know, the old people, they just said, oh, so-and-so's gone a little bit wonky. And then my mother, now, quite a few years later, my mother developed Alzheimer's, but it moved very, very quickly from the first sort of symptoms through to up to the point where she also died from it.
Gosh, and I'm so sorry to hear that.
But now, you know, as you said as well, it has a hell of an effect on the family, because it sort of split our family up a little bit. You know, my one sister lives here in Benoni, my other sister lives in Durban, the other one lives in the Cape, and I'm the only one that ever seems to communicate with everybody, because I'm a big family man, you know, so I phone them on a regular basis. And I end up being the one to pass news from one sister to the other sometimes. But anyway, that's beside the point. Now, my other problem is that I'm type 2 diabetes. I've got high blood pressure. And, of course, a couple of years ago, I had a stroke. And since then, I've had I think they call it a TIA, transient ischemic attack or something.
Yes.
Now, I feel my mental capabilities are still where they should be. I mean, like, I've got an unbelievable memory. I can remember things. My sisters often phone me and say, can you remember this and this? And I say, yeah. And then I have to explain to them, you know, things from our childhood.
So, Johan, can I be very rude and ask you how old you are?
67.
Okay, so you're still very young.
It doesn't feel like it, I promise you.
Okay, but I think in the Karen here would agree with me that would be considered very young. And you actually wanting to know what your chances are here.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, some of the drugs lessen the symptoms. My father didn't do anything. I mean, my mother often complained. They said they're using my dad as a guinea pig with all sorts of drugs and things, but that didn't help nothing. He just got worse and worse and worse and worse and until he died.
How old, sorry, hi, Johan.
Hi.
How old was your father when he passed away?
He was about 60 when he started showing the first symptoms, and he was about 72 when he died. My mom, with Alzheimer's, she developed it quite late, and in about 3 years, it killed her.
So, if you say that your mother developed Alzheimer's quite late in life, one of the greatest risk factors of developing any kind of dementia, both either of the Alzheimer type or vascular Lewy body or frontotemporal lobe, etc., or any of them, the risk factor is age. So, the older we live to, the greater our risk factor is of developing a dementia. So, you know, when we look at some of the statistics, over the age of 80, 1 in 5, and over the age of 85, 1 in 3. So you can see that obviously, you know, the risk factor kind of ingrained. So, you know, in terms of your father, you say developing Huntington's disease, that's a very interesting disease because usually it's passed on. It's a genetic disorder
My dad had what they call a mutant gene.
Okay. All right. So did his father have the gene?
No. Nobody that we know of in the family, in my dad's history, never had anything like that. He was the first one.
Right. Okay. So, well, that's quite interesting because Huntington's disease is usually a genetic type of disease. But be that as it may, you know, that is, in terms of your mom, you know, at what age, if you say that she lived with the disease for about Alzheimer's for about three years or so.
3 to 4 years, oh.
Yeah. And how old was she when she passed on?
I'm not exactly sure of the dates and time, you know.
So does the age that Johan's mother developed Alzheimer's then indicate what his risk factors are?
Yes, because, okay. But yeah, although...
You know, she died, she was about 85 when she died.
Right, okay, so that is, you know, that is, as I say, age is one of the greatest risk factors in developing it. The fact that you have all the physical risk factors, you know, and some of the chronic conditions that are great risk factors, the fact that you've had a stroke and you've had TIAs. Now, TIAs are, as you quite rightly mentioned, trans-ischemic attacks. And those are mini strokes which happen in the brain. And they are very debilitating because they can shoot off at any time in any part of the brain. And you have type 2 diabetes. Do you medicate? Are you on medication for all of these conditions?
For all of them. I take Pharmapress. I take...
So you take quite a lot. So, you know, the thing about, you know, already experiencing some of those conditions, it's absolutely essential that you keep a handle and you keep yourself in check when it comes to taking those medications and reviewing those medications. So that's absolutely essential.
That's where I'm bad, you know, because now I've come to the point where I've got a special alarm clock. Just to bloody well remind me, because, you know, I'm still working.
Well done. That's good.
You know, I'm a design draftsman.
Yes, yes. Well, all of those kinds of things, you know, I mean, you have to keep yourself, keep yourself occupied. And I think that there's, you know, the thing about, you know, keeping the family together, that can be a full-time job too. And, you know, it's wonderful if you are able to still stay on wonderful terms with family, you know, because it's a, you know, I think that sometimes it's best to move away from, you know, trying to put out all the fires and just be yourself and be the loving brother that you've been, but also to make sure that you take care of yourself.
Johanna, I'm going to have to thank you for the call. We've got loads of other questions coming in now, but I think the bottom line is here, please don't stop taking your medication and just keep an eye on yourself.
Yes, I will do.
Okay, good luck.
Thanks, sir.
Thanks for the call. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Nice. Before we get to Clive in Cape Town, who's holding, I've just got a couple here. It says here, at what age can you be diagnosed with dementia? My sister is 31, and I believe she has most of the symptoms that you have discussed.
Okay, now, you know, it's interesting that the symptoms that I discussed, but we actually first, your sister does need to go for a proper medical in order to make sure that it isn't any other kind of condition, that there's no vitamin deficiencies, that there's no hormonal problems. It could also be thyroid problems. It could be liver problems. You know, what are the other conditions that can cause some kind of dementia-like symptoms? So first port of call is your GP, you know, to bring attention to or to draw attention to the fact that, you know, you're noticing these changes in your sister and to have, you know, them eliminated.
Right. Clive in Cape Town, good evening.
Good evening, Karen. How are you doing?
I'm very well. But you've got one of those questions, I think, that is it's one of those things we don't talk about enough, Clive.
Karen, thanks so much for having me. It's the second time that you deal with my issues. But I'm a registered nurse. I'm employed at an institution where we have the oldest home. And we have many Alzheimer's patients. In fact, we've got a diverse group of people living there, people with psychotic conditions, psychiatric patients, as well as frail elderly care people and people affected with dementia. My concern right now is what are the rights of these Alzheimer's patients? I've had a case where Alzheimer's patient, 75-year-old male, a frail man, was assaulted by another resident in the old age home, a resident that was he's quite sane of mind, he's good, he's a very burly, bold guy. And because this frail man, Alzheimer's patient, was admitted about 10 days ago to the home, very much disorientated, not knowing where's the bathroom and where to go to, at night especially. And then what happened, when I came on duty on Friday morning last week, the night staff reports to me that this man, this Alzheimer's patient, couldn't find the toilet, and he just weed in the passage. And then this other resident came out and he assaulted this man. He hit him badly. I then reported the matter to the nursing manager of the facility, and nothing happened. I then contacted the Department of Social Development and asked them what it was. No nursing intervention was done. I felt that he should go to the hospital to get some treatment to determine the extent of his head injuries. But he was bleeding profusely. And nothing was done.
Wow. Oh, Jeremy.
I'm just disturbed that these things happen in these institutions and our elderly people get abused.
Yeah.
And because I spoke out about that, I was ostracized, I was suspended, and what do I do now?
Clive, that is ridiculous. I mean, you pointing out this abuse and then you end up getting suspended.
Yes.
Clive, yeah. we're going to ask Clive, if I could ask you just to hold on for a moment. We've just got to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with you in just a moment to find out more about the story, which is absolutely horrific. But we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
Right, we were talking to our listener Clive, who was telling us the most horrendous story about abuse in a home that he works at, and when he reported it, he got suspended. Clive, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
To tell you that Karen, my namesake, because I'm Karen, my guest this evening is also Karen, so it gets a bit confusing. She, during that break, was absolutely horrified, and she wants to tell you what she thinks that you should do tomorrow morning.
Well, Clive, you know, it falls under the Older Persons Act, Act 13 of 2006, where, you know, the Act provides, you know, some kind of protection for, you know, for older persons against abuse. And abuse can be anything. Abuse can be, can be financial abuse, neglect, physical abuse, you know, in this particular case, as you say, the assault. So there's a number of different types, sexual abuse, etc. And I just want to read you a little section from the Act, which says that the rights of an older person in a residential care facility, and this is from the Older Persons Act, Section 16 says that an older person residing in a residential facility has, in addition to the rights he or she has in terms of the Bill of Rights or any other rights he or she may have, the right to appoint a representative to act on his or her behalf, have a reasonable access to assistance and visitation, keep in use of personal possessions, have access to basic care, be informed about the financial status of the residential facility and changes in management, participate in social, religious, and community activities of his or her choice and privacy, his or her own physician, if he or she can afford it, and be given at least 30 days of notice, proposed transfer or discharged. Now, when we talk about a person that has a dementia, that person doesn't necessarily have the cognitive understanding or the cognitive wherewithal to understand each of their rights in terms of the Older Persons Act. But in terms of Chapter 5, the protection of an older person in Section 30 says, any person who abuses an older person is guilty of an offence. Any conduct or lack of appropriate action occurring within any relationship where there is an expectation of trust which causes harm or distress or is likely to cause harm or distress to an older person constitutes abuse of the older person. Okay. Now you have to, first thing tomorrow morning, contact our social worker at Dementia SA on Cape Town 021-421-0077.
Okay. 421-0077.
Exactly. And you speak to either our senior social worker or our other social worker, Paziza or Leonie, and explain, make an appointment to go and see them, explain everything surrounding that, and they will take a detailed report. And they then have to report that to the Department of Social Development as well.
So something will be done, Clive. It's just that I don't see why, having done your job, you've been suspended.
Yes, Karen, yes, I've been suspended, and I'm facing a disciplinary hearing on Thursday.
And what are the grounds for the disciplinary hearing, that you reported this?
Yes, because I've reported this to the Department of Social Development in Cape Town, and the social workers came out in meetings Friday afternoon.
So you did all the right stuff.
Absolutely.
Yes, I've been ostracized. I've been, and they are killing me, and I'm out of a job.
No, okay. I'm a nurse,
and I'm a psychiatric trained nurse, and I know, and I was so upset because the reason why I was so upset when I contacted the matron of the institution, the nursing manager, that was early in the morning, it was 7 o'clock when I came on duty. She then told me, oh, the second incident, because why, it's not only this one guy that assaulted this person, somebody else also assaulted him the day before when I was not on duty. and nothing was done about that.
Now, you see, the thing is, Clive, you know, you have done the right thing by speaking up and speaking out, and I must applaud you for that. You know, far too often, you know, people, older people, particularly people with dementia, who really can't fend for themselves, you know, are subject to this kind of abuse, either by staff or by other residents, etc. And it's absolutely essential that it is followed up in the proper format in terms of the Older Persons Act. So, you know, I must applaud you, and I wish you much strength with this, because this is really going to be a test of character. But I definitely think that it needs to be discussed with our one of our social workers tomorrow. So contact us, Clive, and fuss bait, because, you know, no older person deserves this kind
of treatment. You've done the right thing.
You've done the right thing, absolutely.
Yeah, and Clive, if this disciplinary hearing turns out not to be the best thing ever, please do keep in touch, because I know it's Christmas, everybody's going on leave now and all that sort of thing, but if there's any way that we could help you further as far as the Labour story is concerned, you know, please do keep in touch. Maybe we can put you in touch with some people. Just email me on healthmatters@safm.co.za and we'll see what we can do there.
Right. I just also want to add that, you know, in terms of the Older Persons Act, Section 26 and Section 30 compels a person to report such abuse. Refraining to report such abuse may be penalised with a fine and or imprisonment of up to 5 years.
Well, that's exactly what my manager failed to do, to report this matter. Because I reported the matter, she felt Keith.
Yes, me. Yeah.
She chased me away on Friday morning like a dog from a premises.
No, that's, you need to have it taken to the next level, Clive.
This is crazy, because, and I mean, even mad. in this act, it's a legal thing. You could have been fined or jailed for not having done what you
exactly.
did. So you do what you do, and I
know, Karen, Keith, up to now, that frail old man did not receive any medical attention.
That's disgraceful. That in itself is abuse.
It's head injury.
No, well, you phone the social worker tomorrow morning, and just so that you can chat with them and get them behind you as well.
Thank you.
Clive, well done to you. We need more people like you out there, Clive. 100%. We need more people like you. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for calling in. Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye
bye. Before we go to Jeremy in Parktown, we've got, it says, I'm working overtime. Can that cause memory loss? I would imagine if you're not sleeping properly and your circadian rhythms are out and all that sort of thing, possibly.
Yeah, absolutely. And definitely, you know, we do know that, you know, many of those lifestyle choices and lifestyle factors, you know, are a huge, you know, contribute hugely. And definitely, it's not just the sleep, but it's the quality of the sleep that is absolutely essential.
You don't seem to sleep as well during the day if you work over, you know, at night and that sort of thing.
No.
You don't seem to sleep as well during the day. And then we've got another SMS that says, does diet have anything to do with the onset of dementia? We did speak about that in the beginning. Or stress, and says, is Alzheimer's a worse form of dementia? No, it's part of the it's like the bowl of fruit. It's one of the fruit in the bowl of dementia.
Right. And you can't say that one dementia is worse than the other. Mm. I mean, it's a debilitating disease as is.
Is it age-related? We said it was, pretty much.
A risk factor is definitely age.
And how does one prevent it? We spoke about that in the beginning. It's lifestyle, it's diet, it's possibly medication, it's type 2 diabetes can be a factor.
Right.
Lots of different things.
All of those kinds of chronic health conditions, absolutely. Exercise is important. You know, continuing with hobbies, if you've always been somebody that has enjoyed sewing or enjoyed gardening, etc., to continue to stay involved and to have a purpose and a meaning, you know, to get up in the morning and, you know, embrace each day for what it is.
And basically all this information and a lot more is on the Dementia SA website. So if you're wanting to go and have a look, it's dementiasa.org, and all this information is on there. It's very easy to follow, to read. Just go and have a look at the website. It's really good. And one of the things that the same listener says, a bit concerned because, excuse me, I sometimes forget why I went into a room. That happens to me all the time.
And to me too.
Or where I left my keys. I have on occasion found them in the fridge. So, yes, because you're not thinking, you're thinking about something else and you'll put them down and then you won't remember where you put them down.
Right.
Don't panic.
Right. The thing with keys is that, you know, it's to find a spot where, you know, you put them on a regular basis. So you have a routine when you walk in that certain keys are put in a certain spot. Your handbag is put in a certain spot. And you kind of know where those...
I placed a pair of scissors and my husband keeps telling me, have you looked in the fridge? I said, I know I left my keys in there once, but I don't put everything in the fridge now.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So
it was just a once-off thing. But we've got Jeremy holding on the line. We'll be back with Jeremy in just a moment.
You're listening to Health Matters with Karen Key, getting you one step closer to a clean bill of health.
In a flash.
Right, Jeremy in Parktown, good evening.
Good evening, Karen. How are you, sir?
I am very well. How are you?
I am very well. Compliments of you and your staff at Cape Town.
Thank you.
For the shows you've done over the years and this year.
Thank you. We haven't heard from you for a while, Jeremy, so nice to hear from you again.
I don't normally phone on health matters.
No, but it was nice to hear from you. So how can we help you tonight?
Your keys are left in the boot of the car there. It's not Alzheimer's.
Okay, thank you. I feel much better now, Jeremy. Thank you.
No, dear, all I wanted to know, what was dementia called before it was called dementia? And number two, is dementia not caused by burdens, financial stress, and everything else? In other words, we create, through negativity, a lot of problems within ourselves that causes dementia. I'll listen on the radio.
Thanks, Jeremy. Nice to hear from you. Compliments of the season to you. Bye-bye.
Okay, so very interesting. Many years ago, before people started speaking about dementia, and Alzheimer's disease, etc., it was found in an older adult, it used to be called senile dementia.
That's right. Yes.
Or senility, or people used to say, well, they've become demented, and you know those kinds of that kind of terminology is really not person centered at all. We really still have to protect the person as being a person that still, has the ability to understand, even though it is, a filtered understanding. I think that inclusivity of a person with a disability, a cognitive and a memory disability, needs to be taken into consideration and needs to be dealt with sensitively.
And all those things that Jeremy mentioned were things we have spoken about that all could be contributing factors, the stress,
right,
and
absolutely,
all in the worry and the anxiety 100%. Could all be. We're running out of time, but we're hoping to try and get one more call on. Carl in Durban, good evening.
Hi there, Karen.
Hi.
Nice, your guest. Joined the program late. I don't know what your name is.
It's also Karen, so it's quite easy tonight. We're both Karen tonight.
Far out. Karen's great.
Yes.
Okay. Karen, some Karens don't like being called Karen.
We don't mind. I'm supposed to be Karen, but I call myself Karen. So
am I.
Whatever. Oh, really? Okay. Right. You say here that your mom has dementia.
Yeah, I live with my mom. She's 87. Now, I'm not sure whether she's got dementia or Alzheimer's, but I believe with Alzheimer's there's a lot more physical effects that start becoming clear as opposed to just deterioration. But what I wanted to actually talk about was that I read an article on BBC Health about how this guy takes his mum out or his dad out and they sing old songs from the First World War. And so, in other words, a hands-on. What I find with my mum is that if a bunch of my friends are around, I'm 64, I'm an old hippie, but so we still have some jaws here every now and again. But when my mum comes in and joins in, she gets really happy. And then when we sing old songs together, it's the same kind of thing. She's very sharp in the moment. She can still do a cryptic crossword clue or two or a Sudoku, but you can tell her seven times in 20 minutes about what day it is and where you're going and whatever. I just wondered how to actually distinguish between dementia, deterioration, and actual Alzheimer's.
Well,
can I just say something before you start? I just want to say, Carl, your mom's very lucky to have you. You sound like a wonderful son, and that was my 5 cents. Karen, the other Karen, yes, you wanted to say something. You've got about 2 minutes.
Absolutely. So, Carl, I think that the way that you are handling your mom and including her and making her feel part of everything, I think is absolutely amazing. It's what is known as reminiscence therapy. And reminiscence therapy is just exactly that, bringing back the past. Things that elicit good memories for her, things that would take her back and transport her into a place where she felt felt, you know, part of it. Exactly. So I think that all of those things are really great and they're being connected. And I just wish more people and more families would actually see that, you know, people with dementia.
Responsibility instead of just putting people into homes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? There is a place for homes. And if a family can't cope, that, you know, it's best that they get the proper care. But the thing is the fact that you've opened yourself up onto to offer, you know, some alternatives to your mom, you know, is obviously really, you know, impacting on her well-being. And she's very, very lucky to have a wonderful son like you. So well done.
Oh, well,
more of
my
that.
My head's going to swell up so much I won't be able to hear. She's like, yeah.
Don't worry.
Do you have a local address or that I could get? You see, because I need a support group, basically, because my whole social life is constrained completely.
And you're in Durban,
I stay in the house by myself, so every time I go anywhere or do anything, she has to be.
Yes. So give us a call.
Every now and again, I strip my mood and I shout at her.
Have you got a pen handy, Carl? Because we can give you some contact numbers there.
Yeah. So I think if you contact our office in the morning.
Okay, Carl. I'm gonna put you back to my producer now, and if you can. If you can just leave. Have you got an email address?
You can't believe the stories with my email.
We've got your phone number. I'll SMS you the contact information. But good luck, Carl. Have a wonderful festive season, and thank you very much for getting through.
And thank you for all the things you do, all the people you do.
Only a pleasure. Thank you so much, Carl. Cheers. Good night to you. Bye-bye. Well, we've come to the end of the show. It always comes to a screaming halt at the end of the day. I don't know how this hour goes by so fast. But my thanks once again this evening to Karin Barokovic. She's Executive Director of Dementia SA, and she's been my guest on tonight's edition of Health Matters. Karin, thank you so very much indeed for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
For more information on dementia, there is a website, dementiasa.org, or you can call them on 021-421-0077. And if you missed that, you just drop me a mail to healthmatters@safm.co.zn. I'll send you all that information.